Patrick from IQC, who's going to tell us about wave particle duality.
Okay, thanks for having me here. This work was originally done in Singapore when all three of us, me, Jed, and Stephanie, were in the same place. And now, after the action of this beam splitter, we've been split up. I went to IQC, and they went to Delft in the Netherlands. So yes, I'll be talking today about an equivalence between wave-particle duality and the entropic uncertainty principle. But let me first start with just some very basic ideas. So of course, we know that if you shoot bullets at a double slit, you're not going to see an interference pattern. But on the other hand, if you shoot electrons, you can and will see an interference pattern. This is real data from a 2013 article. But of course, bullets are just bunches of electrons mixed in with some other particles. So why do we see a change in behavior? We can even see the change in the behavior if we just use electrons. This is data from the same article where they see a transition from no interference to interference back to no interference as they drag a mask across the double slit. With just one slit exposed, they don't see the interference. And then they expose the second slit, they start to see interference. And once again, they lose the interference pattern as they cover the first slit. And so what we learned from experiments like these is that each kind of thing, whether it's a bullet, a bacterium, or an electron, has the capability to exhibit wave behavior. And likewise, each kind of thing has the capability to exhibit particle behavior, that is, have a well-defined path. You either get to see one or the other. There's a competition. And you might think that by studying quantum mechanics, you would get to better understand the mystery of why we see these kinds of behaviors. But in fact, you don't get to understand quantum mechanics. You just get used to it. And just to back up my claim that pretty much anything can exhibit wave behavior, there's been a series of beautiful experiments done on large molecules with 60 carbon atoms or more, biological molecules, where they do indeed see the wave behavior. So it seems to be fairly universal. But even though the behaviors themselves seem mysterious, we can get some intuition by looking at examples for how they compete. Feynman considers a double slit for interferometer for electrons and imagines that you have a light source placed behind the double slit. And of course, the idea is that the light source can allow you to determine what path the electrons go on. But in the process, they impart a random momentum kick to the electrons and end up filling in the valleys in probability with extra probability. And so they smear out the interference pattern. And so although you've determined the path, you've lost the interference pattern. But Feynman says, OK, let's lengthen the wavelength of the light so that we give less of a momentum kick to the electrons. But then in doing so, you gradually lose the spatial resolution of your microscope to the point where when you've recovered the interference pattern, you no longer can tell which path the electron has gone on. So you see there's this nice competition between seeing the two behaviors. So let's get a little bit more quantitative about this competition between seeing wave and particle behavior. It turns out it's easier to consider a simplification of the double slit, a two-path interferometer for single photons named after Mach and Zender, where the idea is that a photon impinges upon a beam splitter, which creates a superposition of the which path states that I'm denoting 0 and 1. Then a phase is applied to the lower arm. They recombine on a second beam splitter. And finally, the output modes are detected. And we can define a measure of wave behavior by noting that as we vary the phase phi, the probability to detect the photon in, say, the top detector oscillates. And the amplitude of those oscillations we can take as a measure of the wave behavior. And that's what we call the fringe visibility. Likewise, we can define a measure of particle behavior under the intuition that particles have a well-defined spatial location. So we can say that your ability to predict the path of the photon is some measure of the particle behavior of the photon. I'm calling here Z as the which path basis. So the predictability is defined in terms of the optimal guessing probability, the probability to guess the path correctly. And how you can achieve non-trivial predictability is, for example, you could have the first beam splitter to be asymmetric so that it transmits more than it reflects. And sure enough, several authors have found a universal trade-off between the particle and wave behavior. P squared plus V squared is less than or equal to 1. So if one of these terms, if P is 1, then V is 0, and vice versa, full particle behavior means no wave behavior, and vice versa. So, and of course, this also treats the intermediate case where you have partial predictability. So it's a quantitative relation. But it's sort of limited in the sense that it only accounts for prior knowledge about which path the photon goes on, given that you know what the experimental setup is. But a much more interesting and more general scenario was considered by Jaeger, Shimony, and Weidman and Englert, where in addition to prior knowledge about which path the photon will go on, they allow you to pick up information during your experiment about which path the photon went on. Namely, they allow the photon to possibly interact with some environment system, which could, for example, be a gas of atoms whose internal state is sensitive to the presence of a photon. And then you can perform a measurement on that environment in order to help you guess the path. And they define a quantity called the path distinguishability in terms of the probability of guessing the path correctly given the optimal measurement on the environment system. And sure enough, they found that there's a stronger trade-off. D squared plus V squared is less than or equal to 1. So the topic of this talk, so these relations are very nice, but the topic of this talk is where do they come from? So should we accept wave-particle duality as some fundamental principle of quantum mechanics, or is it in fact a corollary of some other principle that perhaps we're more familiar with? Naturally, it might bring to your mind Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, but actually in the original article by Englert, he said that the derivation of these relations did not make use of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle in any form. But this hasn't stopped people from debating whether it's actually a consequence of this position momentum uncertainty relation. There was a series of comments in Nature in the 1990s about this, and it was a heated debate. It looked to be inconclusive. But what I'm going to talk about is a slightly different question, which is regardless, not talking about position momentum, but rather, is this possibly a consequence of the uncertainty principle for qubit observables? After all, a two-path interferometer is like a two-state system. So let me first talk about the predictability-visibility trade-off, the simpler of the two relations. It turns out that several authors have actually showed that this can be understood as a consequence or as equivalent to Robertson's uncertainty relation applied to qubit observables. Namely, if we choose, say, the predictability observable to be the z basis and the visibility to be observable to be an observable in the xy plane of the Bloch sphere, then you can just compute. I'm actually following the derivation from the 2013 article where they compute the variances of the predictability and visibility observables, and then you plug it into Robertson's uncertainty relation, rearrange the terms, and you end up with, of course, with this p squared plus v squared is less than or equal to 1. So this is a very nice result. It says that this predictability-visibility trade-off can actually be understood as being a special case of Robertson's uncertainty relation. But what about this more interesting trade-off involving distinguishability? So this distinguishability is more complicated because it involves conditioning on some other quantum system, E. And standard deviations are a bit clunky when it comes to conditioning on other systems, but it's actually quite natural for entropies to be conditioned on some other information, on some other system. So I pose the question, could it be that the distinguishability-visibility trade-off is actually connected to the entropic uncertainty principle? But before I get to that, I want to revisit the simpler relation and ask whether that relation is actually a consequence of the entropic uncertainty principle. And this was addressed a year ago in a 2013 article, they considered a family of entropic uncertainty relations involving the Rainey entropies. So the Rainey entropies are a family of entropies parameterized by a single parameter, this exponent q. And they considered a Rainey entropy uncertainty relation of the form hq of p plus hq of v is larger than some bound. Don't worry about the form of that bound. But their message was that this family of entropic uncertainty relations is actually inequivalent to the predictability-visibility relation. But this is actually not the most general or set of entropic uncertainty relations that we know of. In fact, the original seminal paper by Mawson and Ufink proved a different kind of entropic uncertainty relation where they use different Rainey entropies for the different terms. That is, mixing and matching different Q values. For example, you can choose Q equals to infinity for the first term and Q equals to 1/2 for the second term. And they showed that this relation is, in fact, valid. And our first result is that it's this entropic uncertainty relation that is actually equivalent to the predictability-visibility trade-off. And I'm not going to show you the precise proof of these relations, but I claim that if you plug in these identities relating the Rainey entropy to the the infinity Rainey entropy to the predictability and the 1/2 Rainey entropy to the visibility, then you can just go through the algebra and get back the predictability-visibility relation. Actually, the proof of the first relation involving the infinity entropy is fairly straightforward because we know that that's related to the optimal guessing probability. But the second relation's proof is a bit more involved. So this is nice. Now we know that actually this predictability relation is equivalent to this Rainey entropy entropic uncertainty relation. And well, which actually implies some connection between this entropic uncertainty relation and Robertson's relation, if you're paying attention. But I won't go into that. But moving on. But before I move on, actually, to the distinguishability relation, I apologize. I'm going to switch notations. It turns out that the infinity and 1/2 Rainey entropies are so useful in quantum information theory that they've been given special names. They're called the min entropy and the max entropy. And indeed, as their name suggests, the max entropy is always larger than the min entropy. But let me take a step back from the math and give you an overview of the goals of our work. So the idea is that there's this vast literature on wave-particle duality relations, and we're trying to unify them. In addition to the relations that I showed you thus far, there's many more more complicated relations that treat exotic interferometers involving quantum beam splitters or quantum erasure or polarization dynamics or other interferometers like the double slit. And we want to show that all these different wave-particle duality relations are special cases of a single inequality. And furthermore, that single inequality is going to be the entropic uncertainty relation for the min and max entropies. So we're going to unify this wave-particle duality principle with the entropic uncertainty principle. In doing so, this will provide a robust framework for discussing wave-particle duality relations and deriving new ones. And we'll just I'll illustrate that by deriving some new relation for an exotic scenario involving a quantum beam splitter. But this also gives us some perspective because we know that uncertainty relations sort of come in different flavors. There's what we know of as preparation uncertainty relations and measurement uncertainty relations. And as I'll discuss, this actually gives rise to two different classes of wave-particle duality relations based on preparation or measurement uncertainty. So now, just to get to the main result, we consider what we call binary interferometers, that is, interferometers that involve two interfering paths. And we identify particle behavior and wave behavior with the knowledge of complementary qubit observables. On this block sphere, we identify the particle or which path observable with the z-axis, and the which phase or wave behavior observable with an axis in the xy plane of the block sphere. And so we'll quantify lack of particle behavior by the min entropy of z and the lack of wave behavior by the max entropy of w, where we actually perform an optimization over the xy plane, minimizing the uncertainty. And we're even going to allow the observer to have access, just to be general, to have access to some other systems, E1 and E2, in order to help reveal the particle or wave behavior. So the idea is that, for example, E1 could be a which path detector that might help you guess the path, and E2 could be, for example, the internal degree of freedom of the particle to help you guess the wave behavior. But even with access to these extra systems, the idea is that you're still bounded by this general relation, which is our main relation, which says that the lack of particle behavior plus the lack of the wave behavior is lower bounded by one, that is one bit of information. And our claim is that the majority of wave-particle duality relations in the literature are actually special cases of this particular relation, which is explicitly an entropic uncertainty relation. So now getting back to the distinguishability-visibility trade-off, the scenario, recall, is that you have a photon that comes in. At time t1, it starts to interact with some environment. And then the idea here is that we're going to apply the uncertainty relation at a particular time slice, namely time slice t2. So we apply the preparation uncertainty relation at time t2. And as I mentioned before, we get the p squared plus v squared relation if we don't condition on anything. But on the other hand, if we condition the first term on the environment, then we actually get the stronger relation, the distinguishability-visibility trade-off. So this is basically the origin of where these relations come from. So it's interesting to note that this entropic uncertainty relation that is, in fact, our main wave-particle duality relation has been used to prove the security of quantum key distribution in recent years. And this is related to the fact that the min entropy and max entropy have operational meanings in quantum information theory. The min entropy is related to the task of randomness extraction. The max entropy is related to data compression. Actually, more precisely, you end up having a smoothing parameter in order to get these operational meanings. But without the smoothing, we can give operational meanings in terms of guessing games. The min entropy is related directly to the optimal guessing probability given the optimal measurement on the condition system. And this operational meaning is actually well known, but we actually provided a new operational meaning in our work to the max entropy. When x is binary, we relate it to the guessing probability here through an inequality. So in fact, both the min entropy and the max entropy are related to the guessing probability. And this allows us to give a different perspective on wave-particle duality relations, because now we know they're related to this min-max entropic uncertainty relation, we can give a different perspective that wave-particle duality relations are related to guessing games. So let's consider two alternative guessing games. So in the first game, we ask Alice to guess which path the particle, the quanton, takes, given that she has access to some system E1. And in the second alternative game, we ask Alice, so the first game is the red game, and then in the blue game, we ask Alice to guess which phase was applied to the quanton, given that she has access to some other system E2. That is, we're either going to apply a phase, just to test Alice, apply a phase of 0 or pi inside the interferometer, and we're going to ask her to guess which one we applied. Our work connects actually these different terms well to your ability to win the guessing games. That is, the first term in the relation is related to Alice's optimal probability to win game number one, and the second term is related to Alice's optimal probability for game number two. So one way to think of these wave-particle duality relations is that they're constraining Alice's ability to win both of these games, to win this complementary guessing game. So just to make this more explicit, you can actually define some sort of generic measures of path distinguishability and fringe visibility in, directly in terms of the winning probabilities for these games. And our relation can just be rearranged into this form, dg squared plus b squared is less than equal to 1. This is just to make it more obvious. OK. So at this stage, I want to make a remark that what we did in order to derive these relations, the predictability-visibility trade-off and the distinguishability-visibility trade-off, is that we applied the preparation uncertainty relation at this time slice T2. Preparation uncertainty restricts one's ability to predict the outcome of future measurements, future complementary measurements. So if Alice was to actually, if she really wanted to measure this predictability or distinguishability, what she would do experimentally is she would remove the second beam splitter, and she would ask herself, how well can I guess which detector is going to click? So this is about predicting the future, but there's a different way of conceptualizing the uncertainty principle that is, instead of about predicting the future, you can talk about retrodicting the past. And so we can think of a sort of retrodictive guessing game. Or in other words, so preparation uncertainty has to do with having a fixed input state and considering complementary output measurements, whereas in measurement uncertainty, we're fixing the output measurement, but we're considering feeding in complementary input ensembles, which I'm denoting as ZI and WI. The I is just stands for input, just to make the physical scenario clear that we're inputting different input states into the input of the interferometer. And the way that this guessing game could go is that we can consider an additional party, Bob. And so Bob is flipping a coin. If he gets heads, he's going to block the top arm. If he gets tails, he's going to block the bottom arm. And Alice's job is to guess what he did, whether he got heads or tails, given that she has access to the output. That is, she knows which detector clicked. She also has access to the environment. So it's a retrodictive guessing game. She knows what happened in the end, and she's trying to guess what happened in the beginning. So, and we can define, you know, a measure of path distinguishability that is retrodictive in nature, that I'm just denoting here as d sub I. And we call it, just to be clear, we call that input distinguishability. And likewise, we can define an analogous quantity for the wave observable, and we can call that input visibility. The idea, again, is that these are about retrodiction, whereas in the previous scenario, the measures I talked about at the beginning of the talk are about prediction. And sure enough, we can formulate wave-particle duality relations that are tailored to those different scenarios, those two different scenarios. And the original one that I talked about at the beginning of the talk addresses the question of how well Alice can prepare a state with a low uncertainty in Z and W, whereas this other class, which I'm just talking about now, addresses the question of how well Alice can jointly measure Bob's Z and W observables, or in other words, how well can Alice retrodict what the Z and W observables were at the beginning of the interferometer. So we get these two different classes of wave-particle duality relations. And this becomes clear just because now we know that wave-particle duality is connected to the uncertainty principle. So are there any questions at this point? Anyone? OK, I'm going to move on to the last topic of the talk, which is, yeah?
Sometimes people say that the uncertainty principle doesn't apply in the past. If you take something that goes through a diaphragm and then is observed later in another diaphragm, so you know its position and its past momentum, so the argument goes. Do you have a comment on that argument?
So the way these measurement uncertainty relations are constructed is they say, how well can you distinguish certain sets of idealized input states? So maybe it's not exactly addressing the topic or the scenario that you're considering. So these measurement uncertainty relations say that, like, basically what they're saying is, like, you cannot build a measurement device that allows you to distinguish perfectly complementary input ensembles. But I guess what you're saying is that It's slightly different, I think.
I don't think it's exactly.
Yeah, I don't think it's the same. Yeah.
But it has to do with past versus future application.
Yeah, I think it's
relation.
Right. You can imagine having a spin 1/2 particle that you just measured its z component, and then you measure its x component. You've disturbed the new z component, but then at that, but you can infer from the past what the x component was just prior to your. Well, anyway, getting into. Yeah, but yeah, I know your point that you can, for example, consistent histories approach, you can infer what the x component and the z component were at that in between the two measurements. Yeah, so we really in this field we really have to be precise about what we mean, I guess. And so just to be precise to try to answer your question, yeah, measurement uncertainty is about distinguishing, like, the fact that you can't build a measurement apparatus that can distinguish between complement, like, idealized input ensembles that refer to complementary observables. So it's slightly different, I think. Yeah.
Can I just talk about the, so I'm glad you gave the other relation input, because it seems to me, so would you agree with this? It seems to me that is closer to the original notion of wave particle duality, because originally, when people described this, they were imagining, for instance, that you both do a partial measurement of which path it went on, so you get some information about which path, and you look for the interference. So you're not doing one of two counterfactually possible measurements in that scenario. Both measurements are being done simultaneously. So the first relation that you derived really is about two counterfactual possibilities, which is not the setting of the original discussions of wave particle duality. But the second one you've described, I think, fits, because I can do both those measurements simultaneously. What it says is that, you know, in the two counterfactual possibilities for what the preparation was, I can't retrodict them both perfectly. But the interferometer really has perhaps both a beam splitter in place and something that's registering a little bit of information about which path of formation.
So I'm just curious, what's the original discussions of wave particle duality?
Like, I think, in Feynman's stuff, but even in all the stuff from the 90s, people were always looking at an interferometer where you're both, the claim was something like, look, if you go and you actually probe which way it went, you'll find that the interference goes down. No two counterfactual measurements in sight. It's always just one setup.
Yeah, so maybe the intuition was already there, yeah. And the quantitative aspect came later, yeah. Okay, yeah, thanks for your comment. So, okay, I'm gonna move on at this point to discuss how our framework allows one to drive novel wave-particle duality relations. So there's this sort of exotic scenario that recently received some hype involving a quantum beam splitter. The idea is that you can use the polarization of the photon to determine whether or not the second beam splitter appears in the path of the photon. So if the polarization is horizontal, then the beam splitter is absent. If the polarization is vertical, the beam splitter is there. So you feed in a superposition of H and V, then the second beam splitter is in a superposition of being absent and present. Or in other words, the interferometer is in a superposition of being open and closed. This has received some hype because it allows for a delayed choice experiment. And this has been a tested experiment. The wave particle duality relation has been tested experimentally in a recent Science paper and was shown to hold. But actually, just as an anecdote, I noticed when I tried to theoretically reproduce these curves, my predictions disagreed with the experiment. And on the other hand, when I, instead of plotting the squares of distinguishability and visibility, I plotted the unsquared quantities, and I noticed that they agreed quite well with this article. And so I emailed the authors of the paper, and I said, is it possible that you plotted the unsquared quantities? And they said, yes. So actually, this is... But this point is actually important because when I first looked at this paper, I thought, oh, they have a tight relation, d squared plus b squared equals 1. But in fact, we see from the plot down here that actually it's an untight relation. It's not, the sum of the squares is not equal to 1. So there's room for improvement. So
Is there a reason why the di and
Ah, sorry, I didn't, yes, good eyes. I didn't really explain this fact, but so it turns out that really the valid relation, I start from this relation and I apply this relation to the quantum beam splitter scenario, but it turns out for this particular scenario that VI equals V. So I can replace VI with the, you could argue, more experimentally friendly quantity fringe visibility. So I can replace VI here with V for this particular setup. Thanks for pointing that out. So anyway, even though they don't use R notation, you should identify my DI with their D. Okay. So there's this relation being untight allows for some improvement, and sure enough, our framework allows you to easily formulate a relation that is tight, namely if you condition the distinguishability on the output polarization of the photon, that is, you measure the optimal polarization basis of the output, then this sort of polarization-enhanced distinguishability provides a relation that's tight for all values of alpha, where alpha is this superposition parameter. So actually, there's another benefit of this. The original quantities on the left-hand side are insensitive to the coherence of the beam splitter. That is, actually, you could simulate the data with a classical mixture of the polarization H and V, or the beam splitter being in and out. So it actually doesn't witness the coherence. But by conditioning on the polarization of the output, now the new quantity is actually sensitive to coherence. So you could, just by measuring these quantities, witness the fact that you have a quantum beam splitter. Okay, so that's so much for quantum beam splitters. The last sort of thing that I'll mention is that our framework is valid for what we call binary interferometers, which are, generically speaking, any interferometer that has two interfering paths. Of course, this brings to mind, for example, the double slit. So our work is relevant to, you can derive wave particle derivations for the double slit, where, well, one way to think about the guessing game for the double slit is that Alice is either trying to guess which slit the particle goes through, or she's trying to guess between two different source locations. Assuming the source is far away, the source determines the phase relationship at the screen. So Bob is sort of moving the source between two different locations, and Alice is trying to guess where Bob put the source at. And that's the wave guessing game. The which slit being the particle guessing game. Okay, so our work applies to the double slit interferometers, but it's maybe not so obvious, but there's this exotic interferometer involving two photons named after Franzen. And even though it looks like there's four paths, only two of the four paths are actually interfering. So it still falls under our framework of binary interferometers. Namely, you have the long, long, short, short, short long, and long short paths, so those little extra loops make the length longer, and the idea is that due to timing, because you you receive the photon pair at certain timing, the idea is that if you get a coincidence count, then you don't know whether it was long long or short short, but you definitely know it wasn't long short, and you know it wasn't short long, so those don't interfere. So it's really sort of, in some sense, a two-path interferometer, even though it has four paths. So this also falls under our framework, and we can derive relations for this as well. And so, okay, this applies. So finally, I'll just give my final remarks, that what I've told you in this talk are that wave-particle duality relations are actually entropic uncertainty relations in disguise, namely, the uncertainty relation for the min and max entropies applied to qubits. And this gives, as I've talked about, operational meaning for wave particle duality relations in terms of complementary guessing games. All of our relations that I presented hold if you replace the min and max entropies by the von Neumann entropy. So of course, if you're interested in investigating such relations, you're welcome to. But Okay, as I've said, the actual relations that appear in the literature are related to the min-max entropies. So our framework also, as I've discussed, provides two different classes of wave particle duality relations associated with preparation uncertainty and measurement uncertainty. And it makes it obvious how to derive novel relations. For example, these E1 and E2 systems that you can condition on can be arbitrary. So you can, as I did with the quantum beam splitter, just set it to be the polarization of the photon. But really, you have a lot of freedom here. So finally, I'll just mention that it would be interesting. So our framework just applies the binary interferometers thus far, but it would be interesting to extend it to the general n-path case, which we haven't done yet. So with that, I'll say thank you very much.
So in the n-path case, mm-hmm. my intuition would be that you'd want to talk about modular variables, that the which path information now becomes a periodic position variable, so you just care, you know, where you are, which slit you're in. And then the complementary quantity is a modular momentum variable, so the phase is going to be associated with modular momentum. So I'm just curious, have you mm-hmm. looked at that connection with modular variables?
So are you still thinking about it? It sounds like you're not thinking about it in terms of like a guessing game exactly, but rather, so like I thought originally just to try to generalize the guessing game, like you're trying to guess which of the n slits that it goes through.
I think it's still a guessing game. I'm just saying that the two relevant variables now, strictly speaking, are this periodic position and modular momentum, which have been studied by people like Aronov and...
Does it have to be periodic? You're imagining some symmetry.
I'm imagining, for example, if I have n slits.
Yes.
Rather than two slits.
My modular, what's the periodicity? Are the slits periodic?
I'm imagining, yeah, that it's the same spacing between the slits.
Okay, so for that special, yeah.
So there's, Aharonov tells this nice story about how for a long time, the double slit interference experiment was very easy to understand in the Schrodinger picture, but essentially in the Heisenberg picture, didn't make much sense. And then upon introducing these modular variables, Aharonov had a nice description of the two-slit interference experiment, which he showed to Heisenberg. And Heisenberg was really happy about this. So it just seems to me like it's a natural language in which to study that case that you're interested in.
Okay, thanks for the comment. These modular, so it assumes some underlying symmetry, I guess, in the slits, yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, it could be interesting, yeah. Yeah.
So the question is, what happens if you replace those entropies, those relative entropies, with the other mathematical formulas, like some other entropies? And like, what it happens, like, well, mathematically it's kind of more or less here, but like operational interpretation, the replacement, what would it be?
So replacing the entropy terms with some other entropies, some other Rényi entropies, like or say,
for example, yes, for example.
Yeah. It's definitely like operational meanings of Rényi entropies, particularly in the case where you have quantum side information, is still like people are actively investigating the operational meanings right now. So I don't have a definitive answer. Like I know that the min and max entropies have been well characterized. But yes, you can continuously interpolate between min and max and von Neumann. We know that von Neumann, for example, is related to asymptotic information processing tasks. So,
because it seems that my question is motivated by the fact that they are kind of extreme cases of a range of entropies, I mean those AZ class
AZ Iranian entropies.
Yeah.
And the thing is that like one would expect that if that it's like possibility there exists a possibility of continuous movement between them, and this would result in a, like a big family of inequalities, which potentially should have like I mean.
Same conceptual meaning, yeah.
Yes,
but, yeah.
Or there would be like continuous change of operational meaning. I mean, like
that's true.
So it's like it would be interesting to investigate like the this family of inequality.
Yeah, that would be interesting. So like also the equality conditions change. Like for example, this p squared plus v squared relation is equal to one. So for all pure states. So whereas if you replace min and max with Shannon entropy, that's not true. So equality conditions will also change.
Yeah. I mean, beyond pure states, naturally, I think like in density matrices in general.
I think it would be interesting to look at how the operational meaning continuously changes. I think that particularly would be interesting. Yeah. Thanks.
So if you go back to some of the even older than Rob's discussion, and some of the where people used to talk about the uncertainty relations in terms of microscopes or things like that. There's a kind of you talked about prediction and retrodiction. There's a kind of third one, which I'm not sure if it's different, but it seems different. So maybe you can comment on that. The third one, of course, is that if you were to measure X, then you disturb P, or if you have complementary. So it's in terms of disturbance introduced by the measurement. Can you fit that also into your framework? Or
so,
does it suggest
a
new class of...
Yes, so some people think of this measurement disturbance, which is often thought of in terms of like sequential measurement. So some people think of sequential measurement as just a special case of joint measurement, because you have basically two classical outputs. So when you do a sequential measurement, you have a quantum input and then two classical outputs. And you can just sort of draw a box so that out of the box just come those two classical outputs, and you can just think of that as a joint measurement. So a lot of people, so it's common to think of sequential measurement as a special case of joint measurement. And so then in that sense, we could treat measurement disturbance in the same way that we treat joint measurement. So it would fall under this class of measurement uncertainty. So people, and sure enough, people have done this in the past. Like, this has been a hot topic in the past 2 years. There's been a lot of debate. And one approach to doing measurement disturbance is to basically take this approach that I mentioned, where you consider complementary sets of input ensembles. And here they are. So ZI and WI, and you're sort of, it's like a calibration approach. It's like you have some measurement device, and you're calibrating how well does the measurement device perform on these idealized sets of inputs. And the idea is that if it performs well on the Z inputs, then it must perform poorly on the W inputs. And we could just as well think of that in terms of like a sequential measurement process, where if you can distinguish between the Z inputs with your first measurement, then your second measurement can't distinguish between the W inputs. I think it's common, although this approach is what people would call the state-independent approach. Really, the more precise name is the calibration approach. It's like you're calibrating the apparatus on idealized sets of inputs. But there is also another interesting aspect of measurement disturbance, which is state-dependent measurement disturbance. That is, you want to formulate a relation that's where your measurement and disturbance are actually state-dependent. I don't cover that at all in this talk. And some people have tried to cover that, but it's led to a lot of debate as to whether you can actually formulate like a universally valid state-dependent measurement disturbance relation well and still have it be operational. This is a topic of a lot of debate in the past year or two. State-dependent measurement disturbance versus calibrated.
What exactly was it? Can you go over the distinction again between
state-dependence
and calibrated?
So the idea is that you would want to have in state-dependent, you want your disturbance to actually depend on the state to feed into the apparatus. So, and likewise for measurement error. So
Whereas in the calibration approach, the idea is that you just ask, how does the measurement device perform on idealized sets of input states? Namely, like for example, it would be like the position eigenstates or the momentum eigenstates.
You limit the input states to a special set.
Special sets, yes. So these special sets are used to calibrate the device.
But if you want to know what happens for an arbitrary input state.
Yeah, so that's right.
Then that's what you call state dependent.
State dependent, yes. Yeah, so there's been some recent work proving
calibration-based.
Like,
that seems like the more physical one.
But that's the one that's
been
most
controversial. It's not like measuring momentum if you know what the position is.
So it's a question of can you actually prove a relation that's actually universally valid and of that form where your measures have that form. So what people have been able to prove is this calibration-based approach. They've been able to prove those kinds of relations, but it's harder to prove these. Well, it may not even exist, you know, these sort of state-dependent trade-offs, because you can imagine a counterexample where there exists like certain states that you can measure as some observable perfectly and then not disturb the other observable.
Even though they're complementary observable.
Think of a counterexample. So, suppose your measurement device corresponds to first perfectly measuring the x observable, and then suppose you feed in a z eigenstate, and then you perfectly measure the exact x observable, and then you re-prepare the original z eigenstate, and then as your output of the measurement device, you have your original z eigenstate. I mean, you draw a box around the whole.
But you know what the input was. Someone told you what the input was.
Well, the idea is that for that particular input state, you've now perfectly measured x and not disturbed z. is the idea. And that's the thorn
that's
in the
true.
Side. That's the thorn in the side for trying to prove one of these state-dependent relations. So.
But you're not supposed to know what the input. I don't think I understood it. You mean if the input state happened to be z, then you would have.
You want a measurement disturbance relation such that the bound is non-trivial for all input states, and the idea is that there exist input states for which the bound has to go trivial. So that's the idea. But maybe we should go on. Yeah, or we can also talk more.
Yeah.
Let's talk more.
So I've just been thinking about the original intuition about wave particle duality.
Yeah,
and I'm beginning to think that maybe neither of your uncertainty relation your duality relations quite capture it. So,
mm-hmm.
So it seems to me it's more like the following type of uncertainty relation. So for complementary observables, it is possible to do joint measurements of noisy versions of those. So the first example was people showed that you could have a joint measurement of noisy position and noisy momentum. So this is a result by Arthurs and Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly speaking, you're sort of doing a measurement onto coherent states. So
mm-hmm.
every outcome tells you a little bit about position, a little bit about momentum. But even for, say, z spin and x spin, if I draw that plane of the Bloch sphere, then I can sort of draw a rectangle in there, measure the POVM, whose corresponds to the four corners of that rectangle. And then under one coarse graining, I get a noisy z measurement.
Okay.
So the sort of top and
yes,
the bottom
yes.
of the rectangle. And the other coarse graining, I get a noisy x measurement. And there's a trade-off, right? I can have, if I have perfect predictability for z, I have no predictability for x, vice versa, or I could have what's 1/√2 predictability for both. So there are uncertainty relations that describe how predictable complementary observables could be if you're measuring them jointly. And they're different from the usual uncertainty relations with, say, what's the trade-off in predictabilities if you counterfactually either measure z or measure x. And so in the position momentum case, they're really quite different uncertainty relations. I don't happen to know what it's like for z and x, but I presume you could easily derive uncertainty relations for joint measurements. And my sense is that the original wave particle duality intuition was if you both go in and do a weak probe of which path it went on, and you put the beam splitter in and look for interference, you're effectively jointly measuring in a noisy way both which path information and relative phase information. And the trade-off relation is basically like the trade-off relation you would have for any joint measurement of noisy complementary observables. So I wonder if you could have a kind of entropic version of those joint measurement uncertainty relations, and then show that it also reduces to one of these standard results.
chop-up version of the joint measurement and circulation. Okay, so, in some sense, I'm not sure I understand exactly the distinction, but I think I thought that's sort of what we're doing here. Oops, I went too far. With this, you're saying something different from this,
It's slightly different. It's a sort of similar setup. Like here, you could certainly have a joint measurement of which path and interference, but the quantities that appear here are what that joint measurement teaches you about some ensembles.
Yes. Yes.
Whereas you could also say just how predictable for any state is the outcome of the which way measurement when it's measured jointly with the visibility, the interference. So it's the same setup, but it would be different quantities appearing on the left-hand side. It would still be about prediction, not retrodiction.
Oh, about prediction. But is it? But is it like, do you think of it as a constraint on a device that prepares it, or a device like this? I sort of think of as like it says that, well, I can't set up an interferometer that jointly measures x and z, something like
right.
that. Like so, it's a constraint on a device that I can set up. So. Do you think of it as like I think of preparation as like a constraint on states that I can prepare. I think of this as a constraint on devices that I can build, sort of idea. Which would it fall under?
Well, I'm thinking that they're both going to be constraints on states you can prepare. But
okay.
The first one will say there is no state that were I to measure which path information and it gave me this predictability, then were I counterfactually to do something else, you know, my predictability could not also be high. That's sort of one restriction on the kinds of state preparations you could have.
Mm-hmm.
Another sort of restriction on state preparations would be, if I do this joint measurement of these two complementary observables, noisy versions thereof,
mm-hmm.
there is no state that will make both of those observables in the joint measurement predictable.
No state that would make both of those
I think you need some handle on how good it is at doing each of the measurements. Otherwise, I could just like have a box that always gives a fixed outcome and just claim it's a joint measurement of these two things. And it's perfectly
like, how do you vindicate the claim that it really is a which path information? You could do that through retrodiction. You could say we show that this is a which path information because it allows you to retrodict something about which path.
So now it's sounding more like.
Well, I think it is the same setup as the second one. What I'm trying to do is just understand what was that original wave particle duality relation meant to express. And it said nothing about retrodiction. So if you just look at those old papers, they don't say, what this is trying to express is, you know, trade-offs in your ability to retrodict in two counterfactual scenarios. You'll find that nowhere in those papers. So I'm just trying to kind of give a story about what that original duality relation was meant to represent. And I think
mm-hmm.
it is the second setup,
mm-hmm.
but it's still about the non-existence of any state that makes those two observables both highly predictable. But they're observables that are being measured jointly, each in a noisy way.
Sounds like a hybrid between preparation
and
measurement.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it doesn't have much to recommend it, as, you know, this is just the confused first idea about
we've tried to hybridize these. because, like, for example, you can have both prior and post information. Like if the first beam splitter is, if like the first beam splitter is asymmetric, then you sort of know prior to the run which path is going to go on. And if the second beam splitter is asymmetric, then the final measurement tells you retrodictively which path it went on. So if you make both beam splitters asymmetric, then you have both prior and post information. And you could apply and try to formulate a relation for that kind of general situation. I don't know if that's what we, like, I was thinking of as a hybrid of preparation and measurement and certainty, where you have both prior information and post information about what's going on inside.
But then you shouldn't expect a trade-off. Because, you know, even for position and momentum, if my information comes from pre and post selection, there's no uncertainty relation.
That's right.
Predict the position and retrodict the momentum perfectly.
That's right. If you're doing pre and post selection. So I was thinking of something slightly different. I think not so much doing a post select. I'm not sure exactly how to explain what I was thinking of, but I agree that pre and post selection you can get trivial trade-offs. But I was thinking of, okay, not doing a full pre-selection, I think, was, but rather it has to do with not feeding in the input states with equal probability, something like that. So, and so it's still doing, like, say, a post-selection, but not doing a full pre-selection. But and that gives some sort of hybrid, but I don't know if that's exactly what we want. I mean, maybe we can talk more. It seems interesting.
Okay, still Patrick in.